The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome, listeners. Welcome to Hearth Tales on Fresh FM. Join me, Rich McCoy, as we gather closer to hear the tales of seasoned artists, makers, creative souls, and those who love to support them. Listen to stories of their journeys, how they wrestle with their demons, and how they balance their calling with the scaffolding of admin, life, and self-promotion.
In this week's episode, Rich talks with Gary Smith, who is an arts worker and events creator here in Tasman. This is part one of a two-part series.
Could you start by introducing yourself?
Yeah, so there's myself personally, I'm not an artist, but I enjoy creating, I guess, the foundation for artists the container for artists to operate in. That's me as my relationship with the arts. So 3 years ago, I gained a contract with the Golden Bay Community Arts Council as an arts worker. It was funding through Ministry of Culture and Heritage post-COVID to build community strength and resilience. And then I built this relationship with the Golden Bay community, the artists in the Golden Bay community, and then into the role of arts worker. Tasman region, I've been here for almost 5 years now, moved from Northern Buller over to Tasman. Northern Buller was, I felt really alone. I would travel out of the region to collaborate. There were a number of people that I collaborated with in the region, a very small handful. Mary McGill, who's the chair of the Arts Council in Buller. Tracy McEwing, who is an incredibly talented director. Her and I supported the local youth to do 48 hour film competitions, and we did multiple plays together and we had lots of fun, but it was pretty lonely on that level. And moving to this region has meant that the people I can collaborate with has expanded, which is good.
You studied anthropology and psychology?
Yeah.
So how does that play into what you do?
Sure. So I did social anthropology, a BA in social anthropology. And that gave me a foundational understanding of the human condition, that we are a collection of ideas and beliefs, and when we recognise that there's an ability to be very creative as a human beings, psychology. I then came back and did a graduate diploma in psychology, and at the same time I did. And this is probably feeds more into this. Did healing touch, which is works with a subtle energy body. So that I did the two together. So I was this something that was highly esoteric, and something that was highly scientific. And so in psychology, I could see them going, yeah, there's this and this, and there's something over there, but we can't talk about it because we can't do a statistical analysis on this. But then that kind of hard science coming into the esoteric world and going, yeah, there's all of this religious dogma and woo-woo, but there's this core essence to here, which is a lived experience. It's quite often I'd read texts and there would be this waffle, for want of a better word, but then the person would like dip into speaking about something, and you could feel the depth of connection to the human condition. And so the two really complemented each other. So that allowed me to building on top of the social anthropology, so this wide foundation to really get a dig deep into the human condition. And it's that that I bring to to the event management, you know, the spaces that are heart-centered, that they're about inclusivity, they're about creating a bubble where we play with not ideals, but we play with how we want the world to be, because we can. It's a space that we can construct that is separate, and it can be whatever it wants to be. And you know, and a belief that, you know, the energies that we can create within that space, then we can take that out into the world and make a bit of a make a difference. You know, a drop in the puddle.
I mean, I've certainly experienced that from going to events. You come away and there's a halo effect afterwards. You feel more wholesome, like the outside world can feel quite alien for a while. You end up at a service station or something after going to an event and you're like, what? For those who don't know, what does an artworker do? What is that?
So an artworker, what does an artworker do? So I'll use Golden Bay as an example, and I'm sure this is the same throughout New Zealand, maybe the world, is that artists can and tend to exist within silos. So there's a mode or a modality that they're working within, painters or sculptors or whatever. And there's a language around that, and there's communities that build up around that. But they can become silos, so what the arts workers is in this unique position of stepping into all of these individual silos, and from that position going, seeing the uniqueness of the silos, but also seeing what's the silos all have in common, and in particular where the challenges are. So for somewhere like Golden Bay, the biggest challenge is the remoteness. So while people can be within these communities, these siloed communities, they can also feel quite lonely because they're disconnected from a wider community. So, you know, there can be knowledge within the silo, but, you know, if you're distant from other silos, then where does the novelty come in? Where does the ideas that challenge you to explore beyond, you know, what can be the habits you can create within the silo? You know, there's a very talented director in the Bay, and they connect into they're from the Netherlands, and they connect into Europe through podcasts and groups that they belong to, and so that's their way of, you know, constantly being stimulated to be connecting to something other than what they're used to. And access to resources is another thing. You know, you don't have a shop down the road. If you're creating art and you want to get your art out of the region, how do you get people to know that you're there? You know, the somewhere like Golden Bay, there's a big hill in the road, and so there's a limited amount of people go over there. You know, and within that region, there's a glass ceiling to the price that artists can get for their artwork, and so you can, you know, as an arts worker, you're seeing this kind of overview, and you're seeing the challenges for each of these silos, and then finding ways to support that. And one of the ways that I do that is through something like an event like the Summer Arts Festival, where you're promoting the region outside and getting traffic to come to like the Arts Council's website, and then people organically flowing through that and seeing the scope of arts within the community, and B, attracting people to come into the region and then engage with the artists. And it's a chance for the artists to explore how they want to present their creativity and connect with an audience.
I suppose it also raises the profile of the Golden Bay as a
absolutely
healthy and vibrant community.
Yeah.
Which leads me on to my next question. So what sort of role do you think the arts plays in the well-being of a community?
You know, it's interesting. I went for a job where the interviewer said to me, define art. And I was like, ooh, that's an interesting question. And I just said, well, art is life. You know, we live in a world that unfortunately has us focused on belief, on constructs. We have these tools that are structured. We're in systems that are structured, and the education is structured towards, you know, in the worst case scenario, and indoctrinating us into those systems. It's very structured. It's very black and white. You know, and the scientific model, and it's when it's not used to its full extent, it just plays into that. This is the truth, you know, and I can show you, and I can replicate how I show you. So there's a risk if we totally get swallowed up in that we're stuck within something that's fixed. Yeah, where art is about being allowing the soul, allowing ourselves to be in a space where there's no rules, where there's a total, you know, let's just do it, and there's no outcome here. There's just pure self-expression, pure creativity, yeah. And that allows when from a well-being perspective, when someone's stuck within a structure that is not serving them, that's causing them disease, that allows them to find ways other.
Yeah.
The first step is to find ways to express that the system that they're locked within is unable to, it doesn't have the language for them to express. It's a very postmodernist kind of perspective, and then beyond that, start communicating through the art in such a way that other people can then connect with that a different story, and then that when you integrate with the structure, because I think that structure is important. But it's maladaptive when it's the only thing that's there. But when you bring the two together, you end up with structures that move and grow and have plasticity. I think that, creativity is essential to the human condition.
Totally. And people are attracted and are drawn to regions and spaces that have creativity. Nobody ever goes, I'm going to go to that town where there's loads of accountants.
Right.
I want to go to that really lovely place with loads of craft shops and artists and artisans and stuff like that.
Driving over the hill to if people have noticed this, but you know, when as soon as you get up on and then you see into the Takaka Valley, there's a subtle shift in energy, you know, the place has a vibration, and I think that's in the land, and I think it attracts creatives because of that.
Totally.
And I think the creatives then help build that energy.
Totally agree. Yeah. I often liken it to getting the ferry to Waiheke as well, because there's that barrier to getting there, and it contains that creativity really well in a beautiful space, and I think that sort of draws a certain type of people to it. Types of people. What do you think are the main sort of challenges we have in the whole Tasman region with regards building and maintaining those creative communities?
lack of investment by local and national government.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, the Tasman District Council does not have an art strategy. It does not.
No.
You know, they pour thousands and thousands of dollars into Sports Tasman.
Yeah.
And nationally, we pour thousands and thousands of dollars into sports.
Yeah.
You know, Creative New Zealand did some research, and artists are amongst the lowest paid in their communities. And they started a campaign where, you know, with all their funding applications and encouraging artists to make sure that they're paying themselves $35 an hour, minimum, you know.
Yeah.
And I've been having conversations recently, like, you know, musicians and how little they're valued within our community. You know, people expect them to perform for free. And they've even got themselves this kind of mentality that it's a privilege for them to be up, you know, to be, have the spaces to be able to perform. And I'm just, you know, sound is vibration. It's, you know, and we're energy beings. And when there's a good musician up on the stage and they're creating a vibe, then that's moving through the audience, and the audience of reflecting that back to the person on the stage, it shifts things. And why aren't we valuing that, you know?
Yeah.
And why aren't we valuing art, public art in our community? Yeah. And the other thing that the reports that have come out recently from both the Minister of Culture and Heritage and Creative New Zealand are around the return that you get when you invest in the arts, and they're huge.
Yeah, yeah.
They far outperforms a number of industries in New Zealand.
Ireland, for example, has just brought in that living wage for musicians and artists, because they did a report and they realised that for every euro they invest in the arts, they get like €1.45 back, which is the highest return of pretty much any industry. So it just makes sense, because it's so underfunded.
And you know, the current national policy is they're basically going, you know, here are these existing recognised artists within our community, and we're giving them money because they're going to produce art that's nationally and internationally significant.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a short-term view on things, because those guys came up in a system where art was invested at ground level, and you do not know where the artist is going to come from. There is no clear pathway. And in fact, art tends to come out of adversity.
Yeah,
it tends to come from the fringes. It tends to come from the people who are looking for a way of expressing themselves that they're not getting from the existing system.
And I think for that to happen, you need a decent welfare state, because without that there would have been no Beatles or Rolling Stones. Well, probably Rolling Stones, but there would have been no Beatles without a welfare state. And the arts without that kind of government support just becomes the plaything of people who are already well wealthy. And what value is art that comes out of people who are just don't have that struggle, or don't have a voice to say something, because it's a luxury.
Mm. So that's an interesting thing, because when you say that, what it brings to my mind is there's the ivory tower elitist arts community, where an artist gets to a point where they're recognised, and then all of a sudden they start to command a high amount of money, and then those who are wealthy start going, well, you know, I've got an art piece of so-and-so, and you know, and it's part of my investment portfolio, and you know, this is, isn't it wonderful, you know? And you know, I'm not criticising that, but that's very much an elitist view on art. Then there's the art which is from grassroots up and through, and that art is the art that's well-being. It's the art that shifts, has the potential of shifting the human condition. by creating, you know, from a postmodern perspective, it's creating other ways of communicating who we are.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And the beauty with that, you know, language can do a certain degree, but it's particularly English is not very good at communicating anything to do with emotion or anything to do with energies.
Yeah. Nuance or texture of the human condition as well. It's quite blunt. What do you think attracts people to this region, like artists to this region? It's quite, we're quite rich in creative people.
Particularly in Golden Bay, there's Grant Knowles believes that, you know, there's, I think it's 2% of people in New Zealand would say they're artists, and he believes it's 10% in Golden Bay.
Yeah.
And certainly in this region, there seems to be. It's interesting, Vancouver Island, mm-hmm. another get a fury to it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very, very similar to Golden Bay. Incredibly talented artists, all in their twilight years. All in, yeah. they've got to a certain point, they've done their career, they've been, you know, successful, they've managed to get to themselves where they're in they have the space to follow a passion that they had, and then in that space they're starting to create this incredible art, and that's what I see as the rightly or wrongly, that's the environment here. It's people who've come here for lifestyle,
yeah,
and you know, sunshine hours and you know the connection to nature. And they have the resources and the space to be creative, and they don't need to be making money out of it, but they get to a point where they are able to get some kind of return for what they're doing.
I wonder if it's that disconnecting from the majority of the way the world works that's working for artists. Mm. Like it's going over the hill, it's getting the ferry to Vancouver Island, getting the ferry to Waiheke or Great Barrier Island. Mm. That ability to disconnect and just be in your craft or in your community with that sort of thing.
Mm. I think that's interesting, and I think it's a disconnect to reconnect.
Yeah.
Or to deepen the connection.
Yes.
I think that the world we live in has a belief that being in high stress jobs and making money is the truth.
Yeah.
And that's that structured kind of, you know, aspect that I'm talking about.
Well, it's certainly the way that the education system gears you up.
Absolutely.
Work.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
And I think there is a lot of alternative education systems around here which also are helping bring up that mentality.
Mm. To a certain degree. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Let's talk about Coalesce.
Mm.
You're the co-founder of Coalesce.
Mm.
Can you tell us a little bit about what it is and what the origin story is?
Samaya, the other co-founder, and I were travelling back from the West Coast, and we were chatting about the community that we lived in, and recognising that there was this depth of talent and what it would be like to create a space where that depth of talent could come together and share with each other, you know? And so workshop-based, community, co-created space. And I think that was in November, and then that New Year's, we had the first Coalesce. We had the focus of it being around for a year, around the solstices, solstice and equinox, and just these, you know, lightly curated gatherings. So that was a number of years ago, maybe 4 years ago, and it's now just in its current form is down to a New Year's gathering, and it's just recently kind of gone through a bit of a rebirth where the size that it's getting to met the lack of structure, and the lack of structure allowed for discombobulation to happen. And so we've done some restructuring to kind of bring a foundational strength to it, so that we can then continue to build capacity within the crew, to build capacity within the event. So to build in a supportive, still co-creative. The interesting thing for me with Coalesce is that the original structure was very flat, very open, yeah? And the assumption there is that the people who will connect with that are able to operate at a certain level of consciousness. But it's also an open thing, so yeah. Someone's coming in and not operating on that level of consciousness can cause disharmony. And a drain, you know. So through that, recognized that those with skills need to be acknowledged, you know, that certain aspects of the event wouldn't happen if it wasn't for that person with those skills. And that wasn't happening within the structure. It was, but it wasn't, you know. And that's where we've got to, is there's the, you know, recognition. And it doesn't necessarily mean that the person has the skills for a set job. The skills they might have is a passion and a commitment and a willingness to a job. And that's enough, you know. For us as a group to invest, to support that person and invest. You know, the one of the things that we've put into place is we have a formal crew carer who's has an interest and a passion around NVC non-violent communication, and so we're going to invest in them to get more training, so that they're able to hold that space for the crew if and when it gets to a point where there needs to be support, mediation within the organisation. Yeah, so and that's happening right through.
Mm. And for somebody who's never been to a Coalesce gathering before, what would they expect?
So what makes it unique, I think, because you know, festivals are festivals. So there's music and there's workshops and there's food and there's people so what makes Coalesce unique is that it's really focused on that whoever's there are the festival. That they every person who comes is going to bring something that contributes to that festival. That, you know, like the big events around New Year's, like Twisted Frequency, there is a stage and there is a performer on that stage, and there are a bunch of people standing in front of that stage and are being in effect entertained, you know, and they and you know, the thing that they're bringing is themselves, of course, but there's not contributing, they're not making the space, they're in the space and being entertained to whatever degree, depending on the substance that they're on, and that's the where Coalesce is different, is that when you turn up, you are actively creating that space. So while there's workshops and while there's music, there's also space in between for whatever. And the other important thing is that there's nothing there that's driving anyone. You know, the people who will go to a traditional festival with a big sound system, you know, someone's curated the soundscape and the energetic space from the moment that sound system starts up to the moment it shuts down, and they're taking the energy and shifting the energy, so you're being pulled, you know, whereas Coalesce is about, you know, what energy is up in this space.
Thank you for lending us your ears. You can find more interviews and how to request a Hearth Tale featuring your favourite New Zealand artist, maker or creative soul on our website, hearthtales.com. And you can listen to this episode of Hearth Tales on freshfm.co.nz with a new show every fortnight. Until next time, fare thee well, friends. Fare thee well.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.